I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. Appreciate you joining me today on this Thursday. Also joining me this Thursday, next hour, will be Stone Clanton from Americans for Prosperity. I went to a little kind of a planning meeting for AFP on Tuesday night. You really meant to bring it up on Monday or Tuesday. Definitely, these are opportunities for people to get involved. We're going to talk a little bit about, there's a state ranking out on what states are doing the best when it comes to business, economic activity. This is I believe it's a CNBC. They ran the story. I'm not sure if this is one of their actual rankings themselves or if another organization did it, but you probably won't be surprised where Mississippi ranks here in our supermajority red state. Doesn't look like we are really knocking the cover off the ball when it comes to economic activity. Americans for Prosperity is trying to change that. So we'll talk to Stone Clanton next hour. I wanted to get into some stuff today. I had several things lined up for today. There's a poll that I heard discussed on a conservative talk radio show that, what is the name of this organization? Heartland. Heartland.org is the website. They commissioned a Rasmussen poll on the Supreme Court, and they were shocked by the results of what people's opinion, particularly on the left and the young, have got on our Supreme Court right now. I wanted to get into that poll a little bit too, but I did what I do. I saw Twitter had a major outage, apparently, at some point. I don't know what happens if you're involved in the Twittisverse, the Twitterverse, and you are addicted to yelling at people. I guess you got to yell at your kids and yell at your wife if Twitter's down, but Twitter was back up. So I did what I've been doing and just checking out what the Libertarian Party is putting out for their message. Let me read you. I'm going to do a little juxtaposition here. I'll probably do this fairly regularly. To those of you who are normie Republicans, this will be uncomfortable. Just bear with me and just see what you think about it. And you can dismiss me and disagree with me if you like. But here's the Libertarian Party's tweet that they have put out. And then we're going to take a look at a GOP tweet that they have put out in the same time frame. The LP, that's short for Libertarian Party, says Biden is a tyrant, but he's the symptom of a disease rather than the disease itself. Trump was no different. The modern warfare, financial, welfare, and regulatory states are the disease. Bipartisan schemes built through bipartisan despotism. We aspire to do away with them. Despite the optics, the differences between the DNC and the GOP are mostly illusory and neither strike at the root of the issues. We're the only party that will abolish the IRS, Federal Reserve, EPA, CIA, FDA, FCC, etc. If you see things our way, join us. So this is the Libertarian Party, this ragtag group of outsiders looking at it and saying, you know, this is the system. It's this two-party system that's created the mess that we're in right now. They seek to dismantle it. That's why I'm attracted to them these days. I'm going to juxtapose this to a GOP, Republican Party's official Twitter handle. Here's what they tweeted out. Democrats voted for trillions in reckless spending. Americans are paying the cost in higher gas and grocery bills. Very succinct. Again, this is the GOP's tweet. Democrats voted for trillions in reckless spending. Americans are paying the cost in higher gas and grocery bills. Now, the Republican Party might use the elephant as their logo, but they don't seem to have the memory of said elephant. I'm going to read you just a little bit of not too distant memory here. One more time. The GOP tweets out, Democrats voted for trillion in reckless spending. Americans are paying the cost in higher gas and grocery bills. The Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, also known as the CARES Act, is a $2.2 trillion economic stimulus bill passed by the 116th U.S. Congress and signed into law by anyone, President Donald Trump on March 27, 2020, in response to the economic fallout of the COVID disease. Now, of course, I will point out it was not the economic fallout of the disease. It was the economic fallout of the response to a disease. This is the other history of this CARES Act. The spending primarily includes $300 billion in one-time cash payments to individual people who submit a tax return in America, with most single adults receiving $1,200 and families with children receiving more, $260 billion in increased unemployment benefits, the creation of the Paycheck Protection Program that provides forgivable loans to small businesses with an initial $350 billion in funding, later increased to $669 billion, by subsequent legislation, $500 billion in loans for corporations and $339.8 billion to state and local governments. You want to know how they got away with shutting down businesses and schools? How they got away with locking down supposedly the freest country in the world? This is how. Our government got you to sit down and shut up by bribing you with money stolen from our grandchildren. The original CARES Act proposal included $500 billion in direct payments to Americans, $208 billion in loans to major industry, and $300 billion in Small Business Administration loans. As a result of bipartisan negotiations, the bill grew to $2 trillion in the version unanimously passed by the Senate on March 25th, 2020. It was passed by the House via voice vote the next day and was signed into law by anyone, President Donald Trump on March 27th. This CARES Act, again, make sure I'm being thorough here. The Republican Party tweets out today, Democrats voted for trillions in reckless spending. Americans are paying the cost in higher gas and grocery bills. This was a bipartisan negotiation for the CARES Act, grew the bill to over $2 trillion, signed by Donald Trump. It passed the House 419-6. I didn't look up who that six was. I can guarantee you it wasn't anybody in the Mississippi delegation. I would imagine in that six was Thomas Massie, who actually forced a vote on this, even though Donald Trump asked to drum him out of the Republican Party for daring to hold up this $2.3 trillion bill. And it passed the Senate 96-0 with four people not voting. Rand Paul, one of those not voting, feels a little cowardly to me. He should have been a big fat no vote on this. But anyway, and then again, this was early in 2020. $2.2 trillion economic stimulus passed unanimously by the Senate and in 419-6 in the House and signed by President Donald Trump. Fast forward to December 28th of 2020. President Donald Trump signed the massive $2.3 trillion coronavirus relief and government funding bill into law Sunday night, averting a government shutdown that was set to begin on Tuesday and extending billions of dollars in coronavirus aid to millions. Trump's signature of the $900 billion COVID relief package extends unemployment benefits for millions of jobless gig workers and independent contractors, as well as the long-term unemployed. The estimated 12 million people in two key pandemic unemployment programs who were facing their last payment this weekend will now receive benefits for another 11 weeks. Plus, all those collecting jobless payments will receive a $300 weekly federal boost through mid-March. This was what Donald Trump signed. Now, the Democrats are absolutely horrific on spending. Oh, they're terrible. The problem is the Republicans do not have a leg to stand on, and it sure takes a hell of a lot of cojones to tweet out something that says, Democrats voted for trillions in reckless spending. Americans are paying the cost in higher gas and grocery bills. If I can complete my thought here, the COVID-19 relief legislation was passed by Congress and was flown to Mar-a-Lago on Thursday. This is back in December of 2020 to await Trump's signature. But after sitting on the sidelines during the negotiations, Trump emerged with an 11th hour complaint that a separate provision of the deal, which the president's own White House helped broker, would only provide up to $600 in direct payments. Trump wanted to send out $2,000 checks. Trump signaled in a statement that Sunday night that he signed the coronavirus relief bill only after securing a commitment for the Senate to consider legislation to increase stimulus checks from $600 to $2,000. He wanted more than triple the stimmies that were passed. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi had seized on Trump's call for $2,000 checks and brought to the floor a standalone bill that would have boosted the amount for relief checks. That's right. Donald Trump proposed something that Nancy Pelosi was wildly excited about. She took it to the House. The relief package extended two programs that were part of the historic expansion of the nation's unemployment system that Congress enacted as part of the $2 trillion CARES Act in late March. There's your Republican Party. There's the Donald Trump. Everybody is salivating to get back into office. He wanted to triple the stimmies. Republicans, 96-0. Every Republican in the Senate, except for Rand Paul, Mike Lee, surprisingly enough, Mitt Romney, and John Thune, did not vote on the CARES package. Outside of that, lock, stock, and barrel, every single Republican voted for these massive spending bills. And again, I'm bringing this point up. This is how they locked you down. Had the government not sent out the stimmies, had not done the Paycheck Protection Program, had not engaged in all of this spending that you are paying for right now, you're paying it back. You're paying it through inflation. Inflation is a tax. That spending creates the inflation. Now you are paying higher prices on everything due to this. And had they not spent this money in the first place, how many businesses do you think would have remained shuttered? Or do you think they might have stood on their own two feet and said, "The hell you are going to shut me down, Tate Reeves. The hell you are going to tell me I can only have 25% occupancy, Thomas Dobbs." See, Americans would have stood up for themselves. We would have strangled this nanny state COVID hysteria in the crib. But instead, Republicans and Democrats joined hands and sent out enough money to get you all to sit down and shut up, save the few dozen examples around the country of people who were willing to get arrested to stand up for their rights to do business because they wanted to earn money the old-fashioned way, by working and providing a good or a service. 99.9% of America sat down, shut up, and took their stimmy checks. And the Republicans were part and parcel of this. As a matter of fact, Trump's only complaint about these giant spending packages was they weren't enough. He wanted triple. And one other thing, I'll just do this as my quote of the day to sum this up. The people who took over the Libertarian Party are called the Mises Caucus. This is actually a quote from Ludwig von Mises himself. He said, quote, "The most important thing to remember is that inflation is not an act of God, that inflation is not a catastrophe of the elements or a disease that comes like the plague. Inflation is policy." That's right. Every one of these Republicans, including Donald Trump, either did know or should have known that spending trillions and trillions of dollars and sending out thousands and tens of thousands of stimmy checks out into the people, while they're not producing goods and services, while they're sitting at home ordering off of Amazon, will create price inflation. They either knew it, or they're too stupid and they should have known it. And now you're paying the price for it. And my God, I am sitting here watching people demand that these people who did this come back. They want them back in control. They want Donald Trump, the guy who wanted to triple the stimmy checks. You want him returned to the throne. Good luck with that. All right, welcome back to those few of you who may have stuck with me through that break. History is a bitch when you fall in love with a politician and you have to examine his record. I know most people don't like to do that. We like to examine the other side's record relentlessly. We can really dig into the other side and see what a disaster they are. But it is pretty tough. Self-examination is always difficult. It's even on the personal level. I'm sure I have very big blind spots, gaping holes in my own self-reflections. But it gets inconvenient. So where is this stuff like the CARES Act led us? Following yesterday's CPI scare, analysts were hoping that producer prices would decelerate modestly. They were wrong. Very, very wrong. PPI, this is the producer price index, printed 11.3% year over year in June. Back up near record highs, higher than the 10.8% expected. This is the 27th straight month of month-over-month increases in producer prices. What this says is, particularly when you see producer prices, meaning the cost of goods, what they have to pay to provide a good or a service, is actually higher than the CPI. It means that a lot of companies, from small businesses to large corporations, are still eating a little bit of the cost of this inflation. They won't be able to do that for long. They're going to have to start leaking this out. You're going to see more price increases, which is going to exacerbate anyone, prices. And you've got Democrats out there saying it's the greedy corporations causing all of this. You find out the greedy corporations are actually even eating some of the costs of inflation and not passing them on to consumers yet. I've got a really stunning statistic I want to get to in just a second, but we've got a caller on the line, see if they held. Caller, are you with me?
I am, and I'm just trying to be devil's advocate or whatever. You're talking about Trump coming back in, and you know, he was, you know, wanting to print stimulus checks. If not him, who?
Anybody who wants to shrink our government, who does not think that the government is the solution to our problems.
No, I agree. I agree with what you're saying, and I totally agree with what you mean. But what I'm saying is, who has the name recognition? Who's already got their plane painted? Who's already ready to campaign ready?
I don't really care, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, that could be said pretty, I guess, basically in any election. Thomas Massey's got name recognition. I could name 1,000 people if you want that are better choices. I don't really care who's got the best political machine. God knows, okay. Trump's got a ton of money. He's got a ton of name recognition. He can certainly garner a lot of attention and get free airtime on CNN. There's no doubt about all those things. But this is the guy who tried to triple stimmy spending. So,
and keep in mind, I'm agreeing with you, but I'm just devil's advocate.
Yeah, no, I know. There's a lot of people out there thinking that.
But see, you can think of 1,000 other people. These dimwits outside, you know, the political arena,
right,
that don't know, you know, where Alaska is, they don't know anybody.
Well,
so
we'll see,
if they hear a random name like Thomas Massey, they're not going to know who they are.
No, I totally agree. But see, this is why I have such problems with conservative commentators, one after another, saying things like Bidenflation. Because what Donald Trump did in the CARES Act, and all of the Republicans in the Senate that voted for it, and the 419 Congress critters, including basically every Republican save 4 in the House of Representatives, they are the ones that kicked off this inflation just as well. Joe Biden will certainly make it worse. Donald Trump was trying to make it worse and apparently couldn't even get through his effort to triple these things. So we're trapped in this system. And I don't know who went. You would think a ham sandwich could beat Joe Biden. Do you really need the power of Donald Trump? To be honest with you, I think Trump's the only one who could possibly make the Democrats win in 2024 because of his style. But, I don't know what people are waiting for.
They're waiting on somebody else to do it. It's what they're waiting on.
Yeah.
And they've been waiting on for 30 years.
Right.
Somebody else to do it. That's why we've been kicking the can down the road.
You're right. They sat still for 4 years just waiting because there was a secret plan going on behind the scenes. Guy got patriots to sit down for 4 years until they woke up in this country the way it stands right now.
Well, Q couldn't do it, so maybe X,
yeah.
Y, Z can.
Well, Q is back, ready to fleece the people once again. Yeah, it's a tough situation that we're in, but until people wake up, it's just going to stay like this. Right. I'll be watching it from Portugal. Yeah. All right, man. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. All right, bye. So check this out. Look, I continue to say these things because am I a doom and gloomer? I know we got some tough times ahead. I'm a realist. I understand the excesses that we've had for the past 50 to 100 years are insurmountable without some level of pain. And this idea that politicians will tell you, like the GOP, that is trying to convince you that if you just vote for them in 2022, they'll get it all back on track. They didn't last time. They didn't the time before that or the time before that. But this time they pinky swear that they're going to get this debt under control and really get us back to prosperity. I want you to check this statistic out. This guy named Larry McDonald wrote a piece. He's the author of Bear Traps Report. And I don't remember. The headline was something like, I've been talking about what's going on in Sri Lanka. Their economy is completely collapsed. And this article was about the fact that our dollar has been strengthening around the world. And it's kind of a weird thing. This feels much like a diver climbing up the ladder to the diving board. Our dollar is climbing this ladder right now where it will eventually swan dive off the ledge at some point. But a strong dollar could be really devastating to other economies who are holding their debt in dollars. And so that's what the gist of this article was. But this is what Larry McDonald pointed out in here that I think is just a staggering statistic. And this is why it's so important to understand the trouble we're in right now and why I'm so angry at Trump and all of the rest of the Congress critters, both Republican and Democrat, who have spent us into this mess. The Federal Reserve is tasked with raising interest rates right now, right? They've told you they're serious about fighting inflation. The only way you can do that, we've explained it ad nauseum here, is you have got to raise interest rates above the level of inflation. The problem is they can't do it. It's why I tell you the Fed's going to chicken out. And that's why you're going to look back on 2022 as the good old days. Because they are not going to stamp out inflation. As a matter of fact, it's going to accelerate until something pretty dramatic breaks. I will say today, when I first was getting ready for the show, oil is down to $90 a barrel. This is what a screeching halt in commercial activity can do for oil. We may get some cheap oil prices because the demand is going down as we slide into recession. But I pointed out the fact that back in the early 1980s, Paul Volcker was the head of the Federal Reserve. And while it was still an evil, nefarious, Death Star institution, he did tackle the inflation crisis that was coming out of the 1970s by raising interest rates up to right around 20%. Now, this created a huge recession in the early 1980s. A new president, Ronald Reagan, was taking office and the economy was just cratering. This was supposed to be the guy who returned us to prosperity and capitalism here, and the economy was just cratering. But Paul Volcker said, we've got to get this inflation under control, and he raised interest rates until he tamed inflation. Here's the difference between then and now. Check this out. When the 6'7" Paul Volcker, he was a huge dude. When the 6'7" Paul Volcker walked the halls of the Mariner S. Eccles Building of the Federal Reserve Board in Washington, our planet embraced about $200 trillion less debt than we are staring down the barrel of today. This is why they can't raise interest rates. This is why they can't stop inflation. If the Fed keeps its policy path promises, take the tragedy in Sri Lanka and multiply it by 10 across the globe over the next 6 months. Checkmate FOMC. That's the Federal Open Markets Committee, the Fed. $200 trillion more in debt now than when Paul Volcker raised interest rates back in the early 1980s. Do you understand why they can't let interest rates go back to even normal rates? You understand this is why Donald Trump was crying when the Federal Reserve raised interest rates to like 2.5%, which throughout our history is no big deal, right? A strong, vibrant economy. You can handle 2.5% interest rates, not our economy. They got up to 2.5%. Markets started to break. Economy started to slow down. Donald Trump told them, turn those printers back on. Print more money. And they did. They cannot raise interest rates. $200 trillion. And just as a reminder, my favorite statistic to illustrate the size of a trillion is 1 trillion seconds If you were to watch your watch click off 1 trillion seconds, you'd be staring at that thing for 32,000 years. 1 trillion seconds is 32,000 years. We are $200 trillion of more debt than we were back when Paul Volcker raised interest rates back in the early 1980s. This is checkmate FOMC. This is the end game. This is going to be the debt crisis, the currency crisis. It's just realism. It's math. It's not even ideology, really. The ideology part comes when I explain to you that the Federal Reserve is the Death Star. The nexus of all of our problems, of all of the things we are about to endure, this one organization that nobody knows anything about. And when I tell you about the Mariner S. Eccles Building, most people go, what? It's the Eccles Building. It's the building I've been telling protesters in Washington, D.C. to swing by every now and then when they go and do these massive protests at Capitol Hill or the Washington Monument. Say, yeah, you might want to swing by the Eccles Building, the one that's actually causing all these problems in the first place. But they can't. They've painted themselves into the deepest, deepest corners. And their big toe is in the paint already. They are so stuck like Chuck. You and I are going to pay the price for it. We already are. But I'm telling you, $200 trillion in extra debt. This is all at the hands of that Federal Reserve and central banks around the world who have also done similar things at the behest of the Federal Reserve here. This is Zimbabwe-style stuff. If you think inflation's going to moderate, I got to tell you, I got a couple of Prime Day deals on Amazon. I think this might make me a bad person. I know there's a million reasons I shouldn't be using Amazon, but I just refused to pay $70 for a pair of jeans, and I got a little flyer across where I could get a pair of jeans for under $40, and I jumped on it. $70 for a pair of jeans. I'm still wearing some of the jeans I had in high school and college. They're still holding up. The jeans I bought 3 years ago, they're falling apart. I'm paying three or four times the cost that I used to pay for jeans, and they last about one-tenth of the time. This is what my jeans are basically the U.S. economy. It's an illusion of any level of quality. It's threadbare. I'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Obviously, I don't like spending, and I don't like our U.S. healthcare system. There's a chart. I can't even wait till next Wednesday to present this. I'll certainly probably include it in my next health show as I seek to destroy any faith in the institutions that profess to care about you and your health. There's a chart out. I'm going to do another bad job of trying to explain a chart. It's our world and data. It's life expectancy versus health expenditure. It's pretty stark. The U.S. has set its own path on this chart. I'll just put it that way. I'm looking at it. It's really just developed countries, Australia, Japan, New Zealand, Portugal, the U.K., Denmark, Germany, Israel, Spain, Italy, Norway, Sweden, France, Switzerland, all of these places are all kind of grouped in one little huddle. And basically where they are is around $5,000 per person in annual health expenditure. And their life expectancy is somewhere around, anywhere from about 81 to 84 years old. This is this whole group of all the industrialized, developed nations, Western-style democracies. All of them, about $5,000 a person, living to be about, I'd say probably an average here of about 82 years old. United States, it just takes its own little path on this chart. Our expenditure per person is north of $10,000, so about double what the rest of the world is spending. Yet our life expectancy is about 5 years shorter. It's more stark than that when you look at the chart.
all these other countries just fairly rapidly accelerating on the life expectancy versus expenditures. We're just kind of meandering across this chart where the expenditures get higher and higher, but the life expectancy gets lower and lower. This is also, of course, as the government has decided to pay for more and more of these bills. The reason that we spend $10,000 a person here in the United States is because anyone, because we have a central bank that will just print up endless amounts of money for the government to pay for a bunch of the healthcare in this country. They flood the economy with money, with dollars, and the medical establishment corrals you into a life of chronic disease and misery and picks those dollars from your pockets, the ones that end up there. So anyway, there we go, another big swing and a miss of the U.S. healthcare system. And, you know, this is one of those charts I'd kind of like to have on a T-shirt when I hook up with my doctor friends, who I love. I really do love them. They just have a tad bit of, and it's not even really my friends. My friends, generally, they're fairly open. They kind of know where I stand. They put up with me. But for any doctors who, we've met these people, they kind of look down their nose at you if you challenge them on the vaccines or, you know, on statins or antidepressants. What do you know? You're not a doctor. You're not a scientist. They kind of look, you know, what, have you been doing your own research or something? You got to stay off that internet and let me control your healthcare. This is one of those charts I just want to go, you know, maybe y'all should be a tad less cocky. Maybe not. Don't be quite so self-assured when we're spending double the rest of the industrialized world and getting a lot less for it. And even in this life expectancy chart, I told you I couldn't wait till next Wednesday, but I'll hit this again next Wednesday, I'm sure. I've put it into my show notes for my health segment on Wednesdays. But even so, in this case, even though we've had a declining life expectancy over the past couple of years while the expenditure has continued to accelerate, those last few years in the U.S., not particularly quality years. If we had a chart of life quality expectancy, I would imagine the numbers would be even shorter because basically now our medical system here kind of looks at you and goes, well, we think we can keep you alive for 3 more years. It's going to cost a few $100,000 a year, but we can keep you alive. And you ain't going to be walking around having fun in your golden years, but we can keep you limping along for a little bit longer. Have you still got insurance? Yes. Oh, okay. Yeah, we can definitely keep you alive for a few more years. Too bad. Too harsh? Was that too harsh?
At first I was afraid. I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong. I learned how to get along.
All right, next hour we'll have Stone Clanton in with us from Americans for Prosperity, but I want to hit on this one poll thing. This is from the Heartland Institute. Nothing against them. I mean, I would imagine if I looked at them, I'd agree with a lot of their things. It's a, you know, I guess a conservative think tank might be how it's described. But I heard them discussing a poll that they tasked Rasmussen with conducting, and it was about the Supreme Court. And as I heard them discussing this and I read through this story, there's a lot of pearl clutching on this. Oh, Lord, I heard some references to this can only end in civil war because we think so dramatically different. Now, I'm a fan of the national divorce. I think inevitably we are going to retreat to our own corners of this country. There will be different regions ultimately in this country. I'm not for any level of civil war. There's a lot of armchair warriors out there who don't understand that means that you might have a canceled season of SEC football, which might, you know, that might broker peace right there. But it would completely disrupt our lives, our children's lives. It would be an absolute disaster when we've got enough land here where we can all kind of, we can self-segregate. I'll do a show sometime on how I think that might pan out. Can you imagine being a left-wing area of the country and saying, here's what we're proposing. We're going to have high taxes. We're going to be soft on property and violent crime, and we're not going to let you defend yourself against it. And we're going to run your lives. We're going to decide what medications you have to take. I mean, I don't know what the selling point of any of the blue areas of the country will be, but it'll be kind of comical to see who they get there. I would imagine they will they will find themselves very lonely within a short period of time. We're already seeing movements to freer states from Democrat-controlled states now. But anyway, I'm for a national divorce. I think it just makes sense. I'm not mad at anybody for disagreeing with me on anything, but you don't get to rule my life. And just because you decide to get together and vote for somebody, I don't care if it's here in Mississippi or somewhere else, just because you guys support somebody, that just in my mind does not give that person that you decided to vote for the authority to rule over me. That's just a weird quirk about me. I think it's oppositional defiance disorder, ODD. I'm down with ODD. Anyway, I'll say to this poll real quick. I've only got a few minutes here. Heartland Rasmussen poll. Majority of Democrats would abolish the Supreme Court, call it racist and sexist. They start off this article by saying there's absolutely a movement afoot, principally among leftists and American youth, whose desire to reimagine the Supreme Court so that it will become nothing more than a rubber stamp for their radical agenda. Here's some of the statistics they cite in this poll. 53% of Democrats would, quote, abolish the current Supreme Court, replace it with, quote, a new democratically elected Supreme Court. 56% of Democrats believe Supreme Court is racist. 67% of Democrats believe Supreme Court is sexist. 64% of Democrats favor expanding Supreme Court to 13 justices. Now, the first problem I have with this poll is they purposely took this right after the overturning of Roe versus Wade, when emotions are basically at their peak on the left against the Supreme Court. Rightly or wrongly, that's just where it is. You wade into a poll within weeks of this major decision that the left took especially hard. Most people on the left don't even understand what the ruling was and what it means. You could tell that by the people in the blue states that are probably going to expand access to abortions in response to this ruling, yet they were out protesting like some right had been stripped from these people. They just don't even understand what the ruling meant. But if you take a poll into that atmosphere, of course you're going to get these responses, and I'm going to posit something here that may not be popular, and you'll pretend on the conservative side that this would never happen, but had the Supreme Court done some drastic ruling against the Second Amendment or the First Amendment, I would imagine conservatives would have these exact same views. Conservatives would want to demolish the Supreme Court if it had ruled against something that you held near and dear. No, I wouldn't. I believe in the institutions. I'm with the Constitution. No, believe me. For politics, people twist themselves in all kinds of weird knots. They think emotionally, not intellectually, on any of these things. I don't agree with any of these views on the Democrats. God knows we don't need a democratically elected Supreme Court. But I got to tell you, am I alone in the fact that I've made a big stink for 5.5 years right now, that I am not down with 537 corrupt gals and guys in suits making decisions for 330 million Americans? That's our Congress and our president and vice president. 537 people making decisions, ruling the lives of 330 million people seems a tad excessive. This is why I'm definitely more of a states' rights guy, and the more local the government, the better. But I'm also not down with 9 lawyers in robes being the final word on everything. I understand if in a perfect world, if the Supreme Court was operating as it was designed to work, which is just simply interpreting the Constitution and being kind of the final arbiter, as we know that states do some wacky things, juries do some wacky things, there needs to be a place to appeal the constitutionality of something. But the Supreme Court, as it currently exists right now, is a political body. You would have to think that we have seated 9 above reproach angels with no personal biases whatsoever, just an adherence to that Constitution. I do not believe that that is the case or has really ever been the case. Now, sometimes they settle things that I think make sense in line with the Constitution, and sometimes they do not. But the power of 9 attorneys in robes dictating to all of us is a little off-putting to me. Same thing also with these polls. You know, people say what they think makes them look good. And on the left, they think it makes them look kind to challenge these rulings. And lastly is one of the things of this piece from Heartland Institute is this: it's especially concerning because it's among the young people. Look, let me say it again. If I were a young person right now, and I stepped out into this crap sandwich that we are handing their generation, if I saw what the boomers and Gen Xers, my generation, not just casting blame at others, my generation as well, but you boomers, you will not give up power. What's up with you people? If I stepped into early adulthood and looked around this landscape and saw the mess that had been created by adult generations, I'd throw everything, I'd say radical change for everything too. Now, unfortunately, young people do not have the wisdom, nor the experience, nor the knowledge to understand what the best prescription for changing things is, so they just want to tear it all down. I understand that, at least. I would appeal to them better ways to do it, but I am for dismantling the system as well. I just say this because this felt a little disingenuous to me. Find the left when they're the most angry at the Supreme Court, and of course this is the result you're going to get. And then to use this as some sign that we must head to a civil war, there's no other way, seems a little pandery to me. Just my opinion. It's all the time I got this hour, but we'll be back in a sec.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul, you're on your own.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and it's Thursday. We do our Freedom and Prosperity Hour from 10 to 11 o'clock as we try to get Mississippi off the bottom of the heap. More on that in just a minute. It's official. Americans for Prosperity has got some work to do, so we've got Stone Clanton in with Americans for Prosperity today to chat with us about what's going on economically here in the state and what their plans are to help move us off the bottom there. Stone, thanks for coming in.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having us on.
I'm kind of upset that the show started. We started talking about Seinfeld stuff before we came on the show, and really I think that's more compelling. I can't remember a girlfriend years and years ago, I'm showing my age a little bit, but gave me like a Seinfeld trivia game. If I could find a way, I like playing poker. I do like gambling every now and then when I get to the casinos. But if I could make money off Seinfeld trivia, I'd be in the Caribbean by now because I know it all.
Well, look,
you got any questions for me? You can name it.
I don't have any questions right now. I will say though that a lot of people criticize Seinfeld in the past and that don't like it because it's like a mind-numbing comedy. But
oh, no, it's so clever.
I don't think it's mind-numbing at all. I think it's clever. I think it's a lot more clever than the policy work that we pay attention to.
Oh, absolutely.
I think
yeah.
That's a little bit more mind-numbing.
It's clever. It's creative and stuff. But I have found, I was talking about this the other day, the Friends creator, Marta Kaufman. Have you seen this controversy there? So Friends was... maybe by the numbers, bigger than Seinfeld.
Oh, yeah.
But as an aside, do you know how much Jerry Seinfeld was slated to make if they'd come back and done another episode, another season of Seinfeld?
How much?
$10 million an episode, I believe. It was either 5 or 10, but I think he might have been making 5. They offered him and him alone, not to mention the syndication that has made them all wealthy beyond belief, $10 million an episode for a season. And he went, nah, I'm good.
Hey,
that's some FU money right there.
Well, he doesn't want to ruin it. That's the thing about that's the thing about reboots and like reunion things. Like, I think they're getting ready for the Frasier reunion season, and I love Frasier, but I don't want them to ruin it.
Right, right. There's always the risk. You got to get the writers back. Do you know how Seinfeld did a reunion show?
How?
This is one of the most genius things I've ever seen. They did a reunion show as part of a plot inside of a Curb Your Enthusiasm, the show that's about Larry David, the creator.
Yeah.
One of the episodes, or several of the episodes, was about them doing a reunion show for Seinfeld. So they didn't actually do a reunion show for Seinfeld. They did a Larry David show about a reunion show. But they get some of the plot lines and everything of a reunion show of Seinfeld into this Larry David
that's
thing.
That's great.
It's genius. Okay. It's layers.
That's an HBO show, right?
Yeah.
I have HBO Max. I'm going to make sure to watch that after I finish Seinfeld.
Absolutely genius. Well, my complaint the other day was, so this Marta Kaufman from Friends came out. This is one of the most popular franchises ever. I can't imagine the just billions of dollars.
My girlfriend loves Friends.
That's what I'm about to get to. So they've made all this money. Well, this Marta Kaufman has come out and is now apologized, of course, because it wasn't diverse enough, and they didn't treat one of the trans characters with some level of respect or pronouns or whatever. So, you know, she's having to go back 20 years later and apologize for one of the most successful products ever put onto
broadcast television.
Yeah, that's because it's violence nowadays.
Right, yeah. She should be in jail. I mean, she should turn herself in for the violence she committed with Friends. But it was so gross. But it's funny that you say your girlfriend loves Friends. I've searched my whole life. I'm a single guy, Stone. I've been searching, and I get so close in a relationship with a woman, and then I throw out a Seinfeld reference to see if she's my soulmate, and she comes back at me with a Friends reference.
Oh, okay, so this is the thing. So she is making me watch Friends now.
Yeah, see? It's a chick flick.
And then I don't think it's
but will
total
she watch Seinfeld with you?
She will watch it, but she doesn't like it near as much as Friends.
Yeah, that's so weird.
I know.
Yeah.
It's a totally different type of comedy, but... They're both good, but I prefer Seinfeld.
Oh, Seinfeld's so much more clever. The acting is even better for a comedian, Jerry Seinfeld, who'd never acted before. I would imagine Americans for Prosperity sent you here to talk about Seinfeld versus Friends. Yeah. I mean, I think we're getting down really to the heart of the matter, but it's true. I mean, where is that beautiful woman out there, single and looking for another Seinfeld friend? It is so funny. I mean, seriously,
they should make a dating website or a tag that you put on there, like Seinfeld.
If I could find a pure blood woman, unvaccinated Seinfeld fan who's into fitness, I'm done. I'm done. The search is over. Okay. Anyway. So I don't even know how. That's just what we were talking about before we came on the show, and I really could probably do the rest of the hour on it, plot lines and plot twists. And I would imagine we could find some good politics, even out of in Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah, soup Nazis.
Yeah. You can't get away with that anymore. You know what I also find interesting? Hogan's Heroes. Have you ever noticed Hogan's Heroes is still on television?
Yeah. I watch it sometimes in the morning on the MeTV.
How have they gotten away with showing a show about Nazis?
Yeah, I don't know.
Kind of, some of them a little lovable. I mean, Colonel Klink, he has his moments where he's kind of a human being. So they portray these Nazis. I guess maybe that was softening us up for the fact that we are currently funding Nazis in Ukraine with U.S. taxpayer dollars.
Gotcha. Okay.
Did you see the story that some of the top Ukrainian officials in Ukraine are now buying multi-million-dollar Swiss chalets?
Yeah.
Huh. That's weird. I mean, that must be very lucrative to be a Ukrainian official there.
Well, I mean, it seems to never work when we send a bunch of money over to a bunch of military powers, whether it be Afghanistan, which is...
Yeah, it doesn't matter where it is.
Okay, the Taliban are all over the weapons now, so it's just... Yeah. I don't know. That's it. Never works.
Funny how that
never
works. Yeah. Well, I mean, Americans did get $1,200 checks.
Is true.
Ukrainian officials get multi-million-dollar Swiss chalets. Americans got $1,200 stimmies.
We can't
whine, can we?
No,
can't complain about
not
that
at all.
Okay. All right. We're gonna take a break and when we come back, I want to talk about. I know a lot of what Americans for Prosperity does is you try to unleash people's potential, try to unleash economic activity, get rid of red tape, try to get away with licensing and stuff. Well, they've done a poll, or not a poll really, but they've ranked the states. This was a CNBC story. I will look and see who put this together. But they have put the states through an unprecedented 88 metrics in 10 categories of competitiveness. So when we come back, we'll take a look at where Mississippi stands right now, see if there's anything, any work we need to do here in the state that y'all
always
can be a part of.
Always work.
Yeah. All right, we're talking to Stone Clinton, Americans for Prosperity. We will be right back.
Open, I sold myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much, and my scars remind me that the past is real. I tear my heart open.
All right, we are back. We're talking to Stone Clinton with Americans for Prosperity. So, Stone, I thought about y'all immediately when I saw this headline. This was on CNBC. I ran across this on Drudge, where North Carolina, according to their 88 metrics in 10 categories of competitiveness, North Carolina is the number one state for business in the country right now. And what also kind of attracted me to it was what they said was, and let me see if I actually have this. What they credited with this was, by putting partisanship aside, North Carolina ranks number one in America's top states for business with the nation's strongest economy. It goes through a little bit of this, this idea that Republicans and Democrats in the state have been able to work together to try to get businesses in. A lot of North Carolina does have some advantage. They've got that research triangle there, which is UNC, Duke, and there's a third, too.
I don't know. I remember studying the College in Southern Politics, but I can't remember. I know all that little triangle.
Yeah, they're almost ripe for tech stuff.
It's almost like the Golden Triangle, except for school.
Yeah, right. So they've got some advantages. And I will say, North Carolina is one of those places that I've thought about moving to many, many times. It's got some beautiful areas in North Carolina. I'm a big fan of the state. But they credit bipartisanship for getting things done. But more importantly than that, I wanted us to take a look at the rankings right here, because this is really kind of what you're doing. So North Carolina was number one. And again, this is 88 categories. Let's see. We'll go through them here. Workforce is number one with skilled workers. That talks about, you know, short supply and new push for domestic manufacturing. The definition of a qualified worker is expanding. So they're looking for good workers in the state. Infrastructure, this was 15% of the poll. Cost of doing business. This is one where Mississippi actually scored pretty high. We've got a low cost of living here, got a relatively low tax rates here in the state. For as much as we might bellyache about some of the taxes, they're relatively low. Cost of doing business, the economy itself, life, health, and inclusion. I don't think we scored well on that one. Technology and innovation, business friendliness, education, access to capital, cost of living. So there were a lot of different things that were factored into this. But the rankings, I wanted to bring them to you here. North Carolina was number one, and I was looking at this to try to figure out what states are kind of like Mississippi. You know, I understand that California's got things we'll never have. I understand that New York City is the center of finance. They've got things that are very different than Mississippi. But I thought, well, within the Southeast, where do we rank there? Texas is number five on this list. Tennessee is number six in business competitiveness. Georgia is number 10. Florida is number 11. Florida, miles and miles of coast. I'll give them a little something there. They've got a great governor who's committed to a little level of freedom. I think we may talk about that more later today. But anyway, so there's several other states that are around us that do pretty well. Alabama is 33. And as you can tell, as I'm bragging about Alabama being at 33, Mississippi must be lower. So Mississippi, super red majority, Republican run.
Conservative, socially.
Yeah. I mean, you know, all Republicans, they're in charge. They're the business people, the free enterprise, the capitalism guys. Mississippi, 50. Worst ranked in these metrics for business in the country. Alaska is 49. Louisiana is 48. So I kind of expected Mississippi and Alabama to be kind of tethered together towards the bottom like we are in a lot of metrics. In this case, it was Mississippi and Louisiana. But outside of that, I mean, Arkansas is 41. But again, we're at the bottom of the heap.
Yeah. Overregulation constantly. In a conservative state, there's still too much of a government hand that is over small businesses and big businesses, honestly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and that's what we're continuing to fight over the next year. Even at the local level, at home-based businesses, we're not very business-friendly because we have so many regulations. You know Rylan Thompson.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
he's engraving, got a story. Yeah, his engraving business. his municipality told him, hey, Jack, you know, you can't be doing this in your home. You got to go to commercial property.
Right.
And that cost him a ton of money to do that.
Yes.
Out of his pocket to do that when he was comfortably, safely doing that in his own home, and on his own property.
Is that in Madison or
I believe
Gluckstadt?
So.
Or, yeah, it, I think it's, I mean,
somewhere
so it's
in that area.
Yeah, in one of these shiny cities, you know, it feels like they're so prosperous.
Shiny cities where a lot of the money is in the state.
Yeah.
The financial centers of the state.
Yeah. It was interesting. I didn't bring it up first hour. I kind of meant to in the inflation stuff. I saw a story in the Madison County Journal, I think it was, where they were touting all the growth in Madison County. They were talking about the fact that, you know, and I always hate these, sales tax is up like 35% over the past year in Madison.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hate that metric. Hey, look at that. We plucked more out of the private sector to give it to government. I saw you doing your thumb over your shoulder talking about Clinton and
it was their restaurant tax.
Yeah, 2%, 2 cents.
Yeah, and that's to build more parks and rec stuff.
And they voted for it.
Yeah,
the people there voted for it.
It was over 60%. And I'm not a voting person in that municipality, but I do stay there. I have an apartment there, and I was just like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
What are we doing?
It's just 2 cents. This is how they sell it. It's just 2 cents. And it raises $1 million.
And you don't have to pay it.
Right.
Only if you go out to the restaurant to pay it.
Right. So, which the restaurant owners should be up in arms going, why?
I know.
We're already having to raise our prices. Why are you tacking this on?
I know. It was a terrible decision.
Yeah.
That vote was a terrible decision. And I hate to see it like that because I want to see Clinton prosper. That's kind of my second home now.
Right.
But, you know, it is what it is. And I understand where they're coming from. You know, they're having to compete with other towns around this area that are doing the same thing and that are building other stuff. But at the same time, it's not really a responsibility of government to build venues.
You know how
it's not.
This is a time for if you have to have a little government, then go out there to Entergy, which is flushing money all over all kinds of charities and stuff. Have Entergy Park, wasn't it for Parks and Recreation? Wasn't that what
that's what they say? Some of it's for infrastructure, and it is. It is a lot of it's for infrastructure, and they need some more infrastructure funding there because they've had some issues in the past. But the Parks and Rec part is that's what got me.
Yeah,
that's what got me. It was very disappointed. I was very disappointed.
Yeah, I think parks and stuff like that should look like NASCAR. You know, you got your Entergy benches and your Bank Plus water fountains.
I would love that. Yeah, I would love that.
Absolutely.
Why not?
Right. If it saves a taxpayer money, you do not have to pay for it. You're not forced to pay for some of these things. I love a park. I love a green space.
Yeah.
But we've been conditioned to believe that it is the government that has to provide all these things. That if not, we just couldn't live in good communities without the government. They've got to make sure we got our parks. And
have a concert venue.
Right. Yeah.
We got to make sure we bring in Willie Nelson and family.
Right. We're going to raise your taxes, but we're going to give you an outdoor movie in the summer.
Yeah.
You can come out here and look at a screen. It'll be great. But that also could have been the Trustmark, that could have been the Trustmark movie screen that shows those things. I mean, there's all kinds of businesses that sponsor that kind of stuff. I'm living in right smack dab in the middle of an organization that businesses pay for to be a part of. It's really no different. Yeah. But but Madison was interesting to me because they talked about how they had raised all this money in sales taxes. One of the parts, and certainly Madison is prosperous. I'm not a fan of the Madison government in any way, shape, or form, to be honest. But they've put out a good product, I will say that. It's like living in Mayberry there. I raised my children in Madison, sent them to Madison County Schools. Very happy with Madison. It's convenient. It's clean. It's safe. They've got a great community there. But it was just it seemed to me to be one of those kind of pandering, like, you know, prices are up.
Yeah,
you know, about 20% over the last year as well on a lot of things. So the fact your sales tax is going up is not necessarily a signal of prosperity or creative thinking or really success for your area.
Yeah,
if everything costs more when you've got a sales tax based on a percentage of the cost of whatever you buy, of course your sales tax revenues goes up. This is why governments love inflation.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I'll ditto that for the city of Clinton. I commend them for doing what they're doing. They're being anti-Jackson.
Yeah.
And at the current state of things, I don't think I want them to be more pro-Jackson, but I agree with everything you just said about that. So
yeah,
and I would say the same thing about Clinton.
Well, that's, you know, like I say, it's so funny because within the course of the show, I've got so many problems with our political system, with Republicans and Democrats, or with all kinds of, with the war on drugs. You know, the war on drugs is a freedom issue to me. But if it was successful, I would at least say, well, you know, nobody's doing drugs.
Yeah.
Nobody's dying from drugs. Our kids aren't getting drugs. There aren't drugs everywhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't agree with your infringing on everybody's freedom, but at least it works. But it doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, that's the other thing, is that all the problems I have with it, and it still didn't work. At least with Madison, I can say I've got problems with the Madison government. I was the first person ever prosecuted by their environmental court. The very first person to ever stand in front of the judge because I was summoned for a green pool in the middle of the winter.
Yeah.
So I've got big problems with that. But, you know, I mean, if people want to continue to support it, I at least understand why. They're looking around going, hey, seems pretty good to me.
Yeah.
But the inflation is what is increasing their tax revenues more than anything else, which is just a further piling on of the citizens and adding to your cost of living. But getting back to this ranking of Mississippi, I mean, I talk constantly with y'all pretty much every Thursday. I think I use the term creativity. You know, what does Mississippi ever look at other states and say, you know, the very comparable to us, North Carolina? I mean,
yeah.
They've got some mountains that are nice. They've got some topography that's nice. They've got the universities, Duke and UNC, that are very, and they've got Charlotte. They kind of, but you know, they started somewhere. They're a rural area.
Yeah,
we're a rural state. Do people in Mississippi, do they ever look at any of these other states and go, can we not replicate something that they're doing over there?
That's the only thing that I can hope for, just because I, you know, you look at states like that. Well, and North Carolina is one, but I'll just talk about Florida just because, you know, it's always been in the news since COVID started.
Yeah.
It's always been the free state of Florida.
Right, right, right.
And they continue to thrive throughout the pandemic.
Yes. Whereas, came out stronger.
Whereas other states, similar states, done what everybody else was doing and are continuing to struggle right now.
Right.
So you hope that somebody...
Including ourselves.
Yeah.
The employment stuff here is still a problem. Supply chains are still an issue here.
That's the thing. You hope that somebody looks at it and says, oh, we need to try that from now on.
Right.
Not just during times of crisis, but
right. But
all the time, because it does. When you free up and you let people be individuals and you let people make, you know, opportunities for themselves, and they act on those opportunities and they prosper, that's what it's all about. And that's the only way we're going to ever get that way is if we free up the market, cut the red tape. You look at Watson doing his 29x29 plan with the government, I mean, with the boards and agencies on certain industries like architecture.
What is that? I don't know what that is.
Oh, you've not heard of the 29x29 plan?
No.
It's a part of his Tackle the Tape initiative that he started.
Who is this?
Secretary Michael Watson.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So
I hear good things about him.
He's great.
Yeah.
And he has been a real policy champion and has started that Tackle the Tape initiative where he's looking at government boards and agents. And I always say agencies. I mean boards like the Board of Architecture, the Board of Barbers, and stuff like that. I think that's what they're covering this year, and also salons or hairstylists, whatever that's called. And he's looking at all the different regulations on it right now and saying, hey, does somebody really need, you know, whatever amount of hours to braid hair or to wash hair?
Right.
You don't. I wash my hair every night.
Right.
And I don't have to.
Been practicing for years.
Exactly. I don't think it's going to take 60 hours of school to do that. So that's something that they're really working on. And that's just one example.
What's the 29x29?
So there's 29 boards that they're looking at, and they want to do that by 2029. And they're taking it kind of
slow.
Well, baby steps.
29x29.
Baby steps, just because you know how people. I mean, like you said, we aren't really apt to always act on something. We have to see some examples first.
You got to do blue ribbon studies and put committees together, and
that's what it's about. But I mean, that's just one example of the way that, and that's all that we can hope for is that kind of stuff continuing to happen. And like I said, with the home-based businesses stuff that we're going to be working on, regulatory sandbox stuff that we're going to be working on, we've seen that does work in other states. And,
that's true. That is something that's been tried other places.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially with our agricultural state. It's so much agritech is continuing to come to be made, whether it be remote control drones or remote control tractors that will go in and get all your crops for you. You know,
it's, autonomous farms.
Yes.
Huh. Uh-huh. Could be interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know much about farming, but I've always found that kind of stuff interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hopefully the small farmer survives to benefit from some of this increased productivity from technology, because right now the farmers, I don't know what's going on in the Mississippi Delta. I haven't really, I've got a farmer friend that is at the gym pretty occasionally, and every time I see him, I run over to him. He probably dreads seeing me because he knows his workout's going to add an extra 15 minutes, because I'm like, all right, so what's going on in the farm? What are you paying for diesel? What are you paying for fertilizer? What are you paying for insurance? What's your yields like? You know, what is your employment situation like? I just drill him down, and farmers have been taking it on the chin.
They have. Yeah. You look over, I think it's in like Sweden or one of those
Holland.
Yeah. The farmers are just rebelling.
Oh yeah, they are. And my favorite thing in the world is, it's, if I can appeal to any farmers out there, if you have any problems with your government, what if I get in trouble for this? My favorite thing they do is, have you seen where they take the tanker trucks full of manure and they just go in front of these government buildings and just spray the whole building and spray the cops that are protecting the government that is currently abusing them? And my favorite one ever was, It was a protest in France last year. And some official was out on a balcony on a second floor or something like that. And the poop truck came along with its chute. And the guy walked inside, but he just didn't close the door quite enough. So when hit it, it opened the door. And they just stopped right there. And I think they just filled the second floor of this government building with manure. And I absolutely loved it.
It's already full of it, right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. They made it smell like exactly what it is. But, I always just talk about the creativity of Mississippi. Mm-hmm. It's just
we are a creative state.
Our individuals are creative.
Maybe our government not always.
Yeah.
But we're trying to change that through forward looking policies that are going to free up everything, not just the market, but again people and opportunities that people are having.
Well,
whether it be through education or business or whatever.
Well, you know, looking at this, one of the things North Carolina is crediting. I tend to poo-poo any politicians who tell me they're doing anything good, but you know what they're talking about is that they've come together on these business issues. Do we have is there a partisan problem here in the state that is stopping us from moving forward economically? I mean, are Democrats standing in the way of good policy? If you've got a supermajority red state.
I don't think it's a partisan problem at all because of the supermajority.
Yeah.
So, is it
personalities?
I think it's a little bit of everything. There's a lack of policy education a lot of times. And we're looking to change that, not just through our grassroots, but hopefully looking to educate some of the legislators on new ideas and new policies.
Yeah.
Just because our legislators, they're just people like us, too. They don't know everything. They're just, you know.
Well, I know that.
Some of them work in insurance, and they know stuff about insurance. Some of them are farmers. They know stuff about agriculture. But that doesn't mean those people know the thing about each other. So it's just, I think it's a lack of policy education. That's no slight to them. I don't mean that.
Everybody can't know everything.
I don't know everything. I definitely don't know everything. So I think it's just
I do. So I'm here if you need anything.
I'll make sure to text you anytime. So it. I think it's just a little bit of everything, and a little bit of cautiousness sometimes too to try new things. And I understand that sometimes, but at the same time,
you can be conservative to a fault.
Yes, yeah, right.
You got to be bold too.
Right. You got to be bold, and I think you can have that good middle ground.
All right. Well, yeah, we're at 50th, so we'll see. Well, AFP's job about 42nd. We'll give you the 42nd by next legislative session, 1 year from today.
Oh, don't hold me to 1 year.
We don't have until 2029. I'm telling you, the economic winds they're shifting directions. Mississippi needs to start paddling in a different direction than everybody else right now because we may get swamped. All right, we're talking to Stone Clanton, Americans for Prosperity. I got one other question about the state thing, and then you'll fill us in on what Americans for Prosperity is doing and how people can get involved with your organization. Everybody stick around. We'll be right back.
From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYEV. We're talking to Stone Clanton with Americans for Prosperity. One real quick thing. I just wanted to ask you out of curiosity question. You may or may not know the answer to this, but you guys deal with the legislature, and we talk about how Mississippi is just not creative, not making interesting strides. See, Mississippi is very committed to things like, you know, opening a Nissan plant or a Continental plant once every 10 to 12 years, cutting a big ribbon, making a big deal about bringing in one of these big major manufacturing things, which is great, but that's it. You know, like everything else, we just go along to get along. We're not freeing the state economically. We just put in these long negotiations, give out tons of incentives, and we've attracted, you know, 6,000 jobs.
The evils of economic development.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just doesn't seem interesting. But the other thing is here, too, that concerns me the most about Mississippi and why I think we need to start charting our own course is that economically, we are such a dependent of the federal government, mm-hmm. and the federal government is not in good stead. It's very fragile economically. And you know, can Mississippi free itself if the federal government go – it's insolvent. It's technically insolvent. For us to be a welfare child to the degree we are in a super red state is just mystifying to me.
Yeah, I mean, especially like you said, at the current state of the state.
Yeah.
And I, when I say state, I mean the federal government. Because, I mean, there are sometimes days that I wake up and I'm like, are we living in a third world country?
Yeah, yeah.
And to be that dependent on the federal government is very concerning.
Yeah, and as it gets more... You know, I mean, authoritarian may be a little hyperbolic what I'm thinking of, but it's just getting more intrusive and more weird and more involved in our lives. And I don't think Mississippians are down with that, particularly with the current occupant of the White House. But Mississippi can't shake them loose. I mean, we got to get those federal funds. A lot of strings on those funds.
I don't know the answer to that, Mike.
Yeah.
I wish I did know the answer to that.
Well, you would think that a Republican House and Senate down here would be very cognizant of that.
Trying to wean ourselves off of it.
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine if you sat down, if you go to Neshoba County Fair and you see some of these Mississippi legislators out there, they'll talk about, you know, we got to get our state off of, you know, our citizens off of welfare and into productive jobs. And, you know, I mean, the conservative whole spiel is, you know, do for yourself, bring yourself up by your bootstraps. But they are sitting there every year content to take more and more federal funds and do nothing to pull Mississippi off the bottom of the heap.
As bad as I know that is, and I wish I had the answer to it. I wish somebody had the answer to it because nobody's.
Are you listening? I do.
nobody in government power, in government leadership, seems to be
no urgency.
Yeah, no urgency to wean ourselves off of that. So yeah, like I said, it is concerning, and I wish somebody that was an official did have a good answer, or at least a moderately good answer to do that, because it is scary right now.
Well, you know what I'm worried about
at 9% inflation.
Yeah,
a 41-year high.
Yeah,
and I don't know.
Well, I'm a little worried when I hear that, you know, they have passed this gun control bill with red flag laws.
Right.
And Lindsey Graham, that stalwart conservative Republican, I think he's a blood-soaked war criminal myself out of South Carolina. You know, his plan that he put together is they're going to offer the states money to do red flag laws. Like, they didn't pass nationwide red flag laws, but they made it a pot of money that if you implement these things, we'll send you money to implement your red flag laws. That scares the crap out of me in the state of Mississippi, which is just always waiting for more federal money to come in. I don't know if it's down to the community level so that there could be communities here that try to take advantage of it. I don't know if at the state level, if the money's attractive enough, if our legislature will go, hey.
I'm sure that if that ends up happening, there are going to be more progressive cities that do enact stuff like that, because they're always looking for more handouts.
Right, absolutely.
And that, I mean, that's
we get
how they,
a grant.
But that's
we get
how,
a grant.
That's how they get you, Mike.
Yeah, I know.
And it's scary.
I mean, Mississippi is that poor, innocent child, and the federal government is that van with, you know, candy written on the side, and the door slides open, and they track the kids in. I mean, we've got to get off and get away from this this temptation of all this free federal money. But, again, I just...
No such thing as free money.
Right. And I just listen to Mississippi legislators over and over again go to these Rotary clubs and talk about this strong conservative, you know, state, and you know, we've got to keep it in the hands of the Republican, you know, all this stuff. And I just think y'all are the biggest welfare recipients in the country. Just about. We aren't the worst. I did look it up the other day. I think we're third. But they are welfare queens, welfare kings down there in Jackson. Mm-hmm. They're on welfare more than any woman sitting on her couch, you know, watching Maury Povich and cashing their EBTs. I mean, the state of Mississippi is taking in tens of billions of dollars in welfare. Staying like we're a conservative state. Drives me nuts. Anyway, probably not where AFP wants to go with that. All right, we can take a quick break. We'll come back. You do have things going on.
I do want to talk about it.
I've had fun with you today. I think this has been an interesting show. But y'all got stuff going on. This, I'm telling you, people, you got to get involved with Americans for Prosperity. Met more people that I didn't know on Tuesday night at one of your functions. And this is, I mean, you and I are sitting here talking about the legislature's not going to do this on their own.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to force them to.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to figure out how.
Yeah.
All right. Be right back. All over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling. Falling. All right, final segment here with Stone Clanton from Americans for Prosperity. So tell us what you guys are doing and how people can get involved with you. You had a meeting Tuesday night. That was a fun get-together, and you fed me, so I keep showing up, taco night. So tell us what y'all are doing with this program.
Yeah, so the meeting that you attended this past Tuesday night was the Torchbearers Club, and or just AFP Torchbearers or whatever you want to call it. We're just calling everybody Torchbearers. And what this basically is it's the beauty of the Tea Party movement was all these little bitty individual groups getting together. Right. Well, right now
it worked,
and it did.
Yeah.
And we don't want to stop that at all. And especially with the different little groups popping up all around the state, especially in my area of the I-20 corridor and the Jackson metro area, it's great. But what we want to do is bring those groups together. They can still do their own things, and we want them to do that. But we want that to come together as a community for people, like-minded people. We're not going to always agree on everything.
Yeah.
There might be somebody that supports drug reform. That's aligned with AFP, and there might be someone that doesn't really support drug reform, but they do support our education piece.
Right.
And, you know, it's everything. And that's the thing, because it's the age-old saying that we always say we'll work with anybody to do right and no one to do wrong. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to bring everybody together as a coalition of sorts and do some fun stuff as well as some actual policy work. So, of course, you know, we'll bring in we'll have a monthly meeting the first Tuesday of every month at our Ridgeland office at 7095 Woodlands Parkway in Ridgeland, and we'll bring them together. We might have a discussion over a particular policy piece that we're going to be focused on next session, or we might start a book club where we read The Law or Civil Disobedience or Animal Farm or Believe in People, and we'll discuss it. We might bring in somebody from National or somebody like Hannah Cox. I don't know if you're familiar with Hannah Cox.
Or not. I know that name.
Yeah, she works with the Foundation for Economic Education, but she's also works for AFP for our communication side and does some digital stuff for us. So she's awesome. So anything like that, we're going to have monthly phone banks, days of actions. This Saturday, our one entity, Americans for Prosperity Action, has endorsed Governor Ron DeSantis in Florida. So we'll be doing some stuff. We'll be engaging.
Is that race close? I mean, I did not know, and really until recently, that DeSantis barely won last time around.
And we're trying to, and AFP Action is trying to keep it that way.
That's really hard to believe. You would think that Floridians would look around and go, thank God for Ron DeSantis. Yeah.
Well, I think Charlotte would tell you Florida's a purple state.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who's in office. It's always going to be a purple state, and it can literally swing whenever. So we'll be doing some stuff in that, as well as some just survey stuff. Just trying to get to know what Mississippians care about, whether it be through healthcare, education, or whatnot.
Are y'all involved in school choice type stuff?
Of course, yeah.
You know, that is one of those issues that's frustrating to me, because I can just not imagine. If you went to some of the public schools in failing areas, here in Jackson in particular, if you just went there and just got the parents away from the administrators of these public schools that are failing their kids and just go, hey, would you like an opportunity to send your child to a school that may get you a better result and give you a chance?
And you can be over, and you can have a say in the curriculum.
Right. That you can. I mean, what, 95% of the parents would be on board from that? But it's almost like the administration of these public school areas, they somehow shield the parents from knowing that there are much better ways to handle education than the way we currently do it. I just think that's such a hugely popular issue when you just talk to another human being about it who has children in failing schools.
Yeah, well, there's so many different ways to do it. Of course, there are great public schools. There are great private schools. There's homeschooling. There's church schools. Charter schools. There are those groups that get to, like the classical education groups get together.
Yeah.
There's so many different ways that you can do that. I mean, you know, sometimes it makes me wonder if people are going to keep going to college one day, because you're going to have, you know, advanced Khan Academies online and Google. So it's,
you can learn more by yourself over the course of a single year than you're really going to learn in college if you really want to. The knowledge is out there. There's no gates.
It's insane all the different ways that somebody can learn new things. And, of course, it's not just degree stuff. It might be trade stuff.
Right.
And trying to implement that back into high schools where kids can come out and immediately go to work or something. So there's all different ways to do that. So, of course, we are definitely for any type of school choice, or educational freedom is sometimes what we like to call it, foundational.
That's another thing that Mississippi's on the bottom of the barrel for. Mm-hmm. So it certainly has urgency in this state. And I think that's a missing piece, too, of the economic side, too. We need a better workforce here in the state of Mississippi that come out of high school, trade schools, ready to work and contribute.
Yeah, well, I mean, we talk about the brain drain all the time. Well, a way to solve that is different ways to educate these people.
Get more brains.
Get more brains and show them, hey, you can use this here.
Yeah.
And keep them here and contribute to the economy in their state. So, yeah, that's one of the many policies that we'll discuss. And another thing, like I said, we'll do phone banks, surveys. We might do some recreational stuff where we're like, hey, you know what? Because the thing is, I don't want to ever burn anybody out. And I don't want to act like I'm taking something and not ever giving back, because I want everybody to be friends with each other.
Yeah.
I want them to form a community together and do stuff together.
I think have made good friendships out of that grassroots training that we did last
exactly,
year.
Exactly.
People definitely have stayed in touch.
Exactly.
I'm texting regularly with people from that class.
Exactly. Another thing we'll be doing is going to the Shelby County Fair on the 28th. If anybody wants to tag along, I would be more than welcome to load up a bus and go over there and show people that Americans for Prosperity is here, and we're making a difference in the state.
Yeah, y'all kind of got to be there, don't you? That's the political hotbed of the state of Mississippi in the heat.
Yep, and the muggy, muddy heat.
Yes, it's a mess out there. All right, well, how can everybody find you and find your stuff? You give out your personal email and stuff, don't you?
Yeah, my email is sclanton, sclanton, at afphq.org. Or you can reach me at 601-300-9536, or on Facebook Messenger, or Facebook is Americans for Prosperity-Mississippi, and you can find us there.
What's your Social Security number if somebody wants to look you up that way?
I'll give you my personal home address. that's the closest thing I'll give to you.
Yeah, so, all right. Well, yeah, y'all will continue to do it. We'll continue to talk about it. So next first Tuesday of next month, right?
First Tuesday, and then we'll be in Meridian later on down the road. So we're wanting to bring this community together. We'd love to see 50 people by this time next year or something.
Yeah, so you're working that little belt across central Mississippi, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you're glad that oil is down to $90 a barrel today.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that because of gas tax holiday?
No, I think that's the impending recession.
that could be it.
Yeah. All right, we've been talking to Stone Clanton, Americans Prosperity. Make sure you check them out. We'll see you tomorrow.
How hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter.